After what seemed like a lifetime of delays, it's a new day and I am headed southwest again. And we'll talk about that in Bob Davis Podcast 1114. Funny, I just did a podcast probably a week ago, and yet, just because I'm back out on the road, it feels like I haven't done a podcast in months. And so I feel like I almost have to learn how to do a podcast again. But I do have a lot of people to thank, and so I'm going to do that in this podcast. So these are people sending me donations, which go right in the tank, and I really, really appreciate it. Mike Murphy, $20. $10 from someone who has the greatest email address I've ever seen. Peace Like a River, which is wonderful. Thank you. Mindy Collins, back in Florida, $20. Thank you. Brandon Sabata, one of my YouTube guys, $5. Also getting a lot of email from people, both from the YouTube channel and other places, and that's great. So I don't know if you've visited the bobdavispodcast.com, which is the website that holds all the podcasts. If you have, then you know the drill. If you want to make a donation, when you go to the website, either on your phone or on your desktop or some portable computer, so to speak, if you hit the site from a PC, let's just put it that way, or a Mac, whatever, you're going to see a picture of Mobile Podcast Command up near the top. Just under that is an oval donate button. You click on that, it takes you to PayPal, and you can set up a monthly donation, or you can do whatever you want in terms of a donation. I appreciate it. It all goes in the tank. If you're on a phone, the donate button and all the donate stuff is all the way, you have to scroll all the way to the bottom of the page at the bobdavispodcast.com, and you can find the same thing. There's a little oval that says donate, and then it takes you to PayPal. I appreciate the support at any level. Subscribing to the Bob Davis Podcast at iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Audible, or subscribing to the Bob Davis Podcast YouTube channel. You just look for the Bob Davis Podcast at YouTube. I'm also on Instagram, and normally I do a long and involved list, but I don't want to waste your time with all of that. Suffice it to say, I have a podcast on YouTube as well as this audio podcast, which is the original podcast. So thanks for listening, and thanks for donating and commenting and all that stuff. I was in New Hampshire for over a month. I did some camping. I stayed with friends. I did a lot of touring of the state, learned a lot of history, went to Maine, went all over New Hampshire, had all kinds of food, and it was a great experience. And it was capped off with a very emotional and very wonderful wedding that I went to. That was my nephew's wedding, and my son and my nephews really were pretty much raised together. So it was a really emotional sort of get together of two families, not just our family, but the bride's family, which was very emotional. And I think it was good because it was, without trying to explain the whole thing, you know, a lot of times weddings don't feel, they're always emotional, I guess, but they don't get you. There was just enough sharing and deep emotional displays of emotion at this wedding that it just turned out to be fantastic. And then the next morning, there was a brunch. The bride had, her family has a very small beach house on the beach in New Hampshire, the Atlantic Ocean. There are huge condos and very expensive homes all around, but they've had this beach house for, you know, generations, and they've never done anything to it. It's just this old sort of classic cottage from back in the day when those things were accessible by just pretty much everybody, and there weren't million-dollar mansions and condos and things like that around it. On Sunday, the 17th, I hit the road, and it has been pure bliss, but it's something that you have to get used to again. I did a podcast recently. Somebody asked me, how do you nomads handle loneliness? And it was, you know, I'm glad I did the podcast. As I explained, a lot of it was really just free association and sitting out on a very humid, warm night at my friend's house in Manchester about if you are going to be a nomad, you got to get used to being alone. I also said in there that I did this largely to get away from people, because being alone for me is not a problem. Spending time alone for me is just not a problem. And that was the last podcast I did. And I'm in a completely different headspace. First of all, I'm sitting in a campsite. It's pitch dark. You know, I've got a little lantern, which I've turned off. I've got my recorder. I've got a fire going. The bugs sound different this time of the year. It's fall. The leaves are starting to change. And I am in the Allegheny National Forest. So I've made it in the last, what is this? This is Wednesday. And I left on Sunday. So I've made it across, not in a big hurry, but all on back roads. Made it across New Hampshire, on into the southern half of New York through the Catskills. My plan was to camp in the Catskills, but the Catskills, it was raining. I mean, it was really raining, and I'm just not going to go through that again. I tried that in New Hampshire a couple of days, and it's just so much rain, and it was just, I'll just drive through. Catskills, wonderful. Just an amazing place, and there's a lot of thoughts that come to mind, and this is the other thing about spending time alone. There are a lot of thoughts that come to mind that I mean, it's a river. It's a river of realizations and thoughts, and often trying to voice them ruins them, because the language does not always describe what is going on with internal processes, even when you know what you're thinking about. It's very difficult to find the language that does certain observations justice. One of the things I noticed about the Catskills, this is the look that so many places are going for. This sort of rural, chic kind of look. Many places try and fail. This is something that only is found, generally speaking, on the coasts, either in parts of Southern California or Oregon or Washington or in upstate New York. And in these classic places like the Catskills or the Adirondacks, which for more than 200-300 years have been refuges for various people and for various thinking, as well as places where people did business and farmed and had commerce and everything else, especially coming from Portsmouth, which is a really cool town. It has the urban atmosphere, but it's not a big town. And New Hampshire, I can't say enough about New Hampshire in terms of, I never realized that the East could be so inviting and so oddly hip, if you will, because everyone thinks of the West Coast as being this sort of halcyon, wonderful place that's super hip and has all these things. Those things essentially started in the Catskills long before they got started out west in some ways. So Catskills, Adirondacks, upstate New York, this is where a lot of the early communes were, you know, if you're into that sort of thing. And of course, upstate New York is where, you know, I believe, I don't know where Woodstock is, but it's around that general area north of New York where Woodstock was. So there's this sort of energy charging this area when you drive through. And it's a different kind of energy from northern upstate or outstate or whatever you want to call this part of New York, from Jamestown up. There are different kinds of towns. These little places around the Catskills and to a certain degree the Adirondacks and all those towns in between just have this feel. The further west you get, the less more like that it is. The further west you get, the more it's just farm towns and lots of Mennonites and Amish and things of that nature in the rest of New York that's not New York City, right? But beautiful towns. You come up and down hills, and it's the same thing. Abundance, lots of corn being harvested, lots of soybeans, and lots of little agricultural towns that date back to the late 1700s, the late 1600s, or the early 1800s, which is amazing to me. The amount of history in New York and parts of other parts of New England is really amazing, and you can feel it. It's the vibe is charged with that kind of deep history. And we were talking about how, you know, there are towns in the Midwest that try to go for that. Galena, Illinois, and also almost everyone, if they're near a big city, Milwaukee or Minneapolis, St. Paul, the farm towns try to sort of have this rural New York feel, if you will. They try to create this atmosphere or vibe with the winemaking and the craft beers and things of that nature. It's hard to approach this level of roots and depth and history that these places have in Vermont and New Hampshire and Massachusetts and New York. So it's been great cruising out of there. Today, I dropped down from New York into Pennsylvania, so I got out of the Catskills, and I've been sleeping in truck stops or rest areas, which have been fine. It's funny, I lay down in my truck no matter where I am, and I just feel great being on the road and being by myself. It's very interesting. And so today I came on down because my plan was to come to the Allegheny Forests. And the thing about the National Forests is camping in the National Forests is relatively inexpensive, and they have services. Like, they have showers at this campground, as well as other things, and it doesn't cost very much at all. So it's nice to come on down here. Whereas if you go to some campground or state parks, especially in New York, they're very expensive. They're $30 a night sometimes, and you don't get any discounts. So it's nice to be in the National Forest again. We are very lucky to have these National Forests, and this is one of the first. In fact, the Allegheny National Forest in Pennsylvania is one of the first national forests that was developed right after the Weeks Act passed in something like 1911, and these regions were barren. They were heavily logged, and there were forest fires and all sorts of other things, and so it was very much about land conservation when they purchased the first parcel of land that became the Allegheny National Forest. Since then, there's been dam projects and reservoirs built and all sorts of other things, and more land added. And again, it is pitch black. I can't even see it. But I'm down near the water, sort of. And it's great to be just out with a campfire, enjoying myself again, and being on the road again. So where are we headed, and what's the plan, Bob Davis? I'll talk about that in the second half of this podcast. Well, it's fall, and if you had a garden this summer, then you know you got to start, obviously, weeding, pulling stuff out, and so most of winter, especially for people I know that are into gardening, is spent figuring out what they're going to plant and all that. Let me recommend for you Garden Gurus MN. If you're in Minnesota and or Wisconsin and you're thinking about doing a garden and you want some help either preparing it for you or suggestions or any of that, GardenGurusMN.com can help you out. They can do corporate accounts. They can stage real estate. But what they really love to do is just prepare people's gardens. In addition, if you're one of these people that's just like, I just want landscaping and I just want this built so that I can enjoy a garden, again, Garden Gurus MN. Check them out at GardenGurusMN.com. As I said, I've been doing all of this on back roads, and I'm getting really good at completely avoiding cities. So I'm in Pennsylvania in the Allegheny National Forest. There's a couple of different Allegheny National Forest areas. This one is the National Forest area. There's also, in this same complex, which is, you know, pretty large, there's also a state forest and a state park. I'm in the National Forest, and I'm going to roll out of here tomorrow and keep going down, I think it's 321 South or something like that. I hate to do routes because I usually get the numbers wrong. and I'll be heading south, avoiding Pittsburgh and sort of working my way into West Virginia for about a minute. And then I'll be taking, I think it's 5, that rolls along the contours of the river right on the border of Ohio and West Virginia. And I'm going to be rolling through there on down into Kentucky and into Tennessee, where I'm going to probably see some friends and take a little break off the road for a very short period of time. The cool thing is there's national forests all along there. There's the Wayne National Forest in Ohio. Obviously, West Virginia is loaded with them, although I don't think I'll be camping in West Virginia. Certainly, Kentucky has the Daniel Boone, and then Tennessee is full of national forests that are just amazing. I'm probably not going far enough east to hit the Smoky Mountains National Park. That is highly recommended if you're doing it. But it's really fun to avoid the cities. You know, a lot of people travel, they're on the interstates, or they stay near big cities and go into the paid campgrounds. I don't know what the logic is. The interstates are built so that you don't have to use that much fuel and it's faster and everything else. I find the interstate really frustrating. It's not that my truck won't go fast. You know, it'll go 75 if I need it to. I don't like driving that fast. For one thing, it is higher fuel consumption for a big truck. It's just not a pleasurable experience. There's something about people riding in your right lane, in the left lane behind your mirror so you can't see them, or people rolling up behind you, you know, and then this constant pressure to move and you don't see anything. You just see these hills and trees and stuff going by, so you're not experiencing it. And believe me, I know, because I traveled the interstates extensively when I was doing speed runs in my Trans Am and my Crown Vicks. So I'm well aware of the nature of interstate driving. But ever since I started doing the whole back road thing, and sometimes really back roads, like not even, you know, like they're state roads or county roads, because you have to avoid big cities. I've been in some cities, like I drove through Ithaca, which is not really a big city. It's a college town. Even that was frustrating, mainly because they don't really mark the state roads or the U.S. highways very well when you're moving through urban areas. There was at least one town I was in where somebody had stolen the signs that indicated which highway was on. And this is the only time I will use Google to find out whether I'm actually on the highway I'm supposed to be on, because somebody didn't mark it properly or the sign was down. And that's a problem if you're ever thinking about doing this. That's one of the things that you have to really be aware of. The other thing is, I used to write out where I was, where I was going, and I had it in steps, and then I just followed the list. I don't do that anymore. I pretty much navigate on the fly, because sometimes I'll decide, you know what, I'm going to continue on this road. No, I'm not going to turn right, even though that's one of the ways I could have gone, but I'm going to go this way. So because I've done this a long time, now I just navigate on the fly, and I have the maps right there at my fingertips, and I'll pull over. You end up pulling over a lot in some town, and spending 15 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever, or a half hour, you know, if you want to get an ice cream cone or something, just looking at your maps and trying to figure out where you're going to go. And really the hardest part about it is you got to figure out where you want to end up in the next state. So if you go too far north, then you're going to have to come south. And again, I'm trying to cut the edges off to save fuel, especially now. You really gotta pay attention to which road you're on and whether or not, and if you miss a turn, should you go back or do you get the next one? That kind of a thing. So there's a lot of pulling over and checking the maps. But I don't mind doing that, because that's half the fun. And again, you're in these towns. You're experiencing what these towns look like and what they're like and what's going on. And it was kind of fun to drive through Ithaca, because late in September, the college towns are very busy because mom and dad are bringing their little darlings to school for the first time, and you see the woman with the SUV, and it's full of stuff from Target or from, I don't know, some store where they bought all the stuff that's going to go into the dorm room to make it look like home and all that stuff. And you see them, you know, saying goodbye as you drive by, and that's kind of neat. And I remember doing that, although I didn't do the whole, it was just a matter of, I'll tell you what, going and picking my son up from school was worse than taking him, because he had acquired all this crap, and of course he had a Jeep. It was like, you could put nothing in the Jeep. So guess whose car ended up so full that it was literally scraping the bottom of the road all the way back to Minnesota from Baltimore. It was ridiculous. I was so pissed. After 4 years in college, you're like, you can figure this out yourself. I don't have to figure this out for you. So, but that's how you avoid the cities. You kind of really have to get used to using maps and following, knowing, you know, after a while it becomes second nature. You almost know, I don't think that's going to be a good road or whatever. And also figuring out exactly what direction are you actually headed? How do you want to enter Kentucky? And then for me, I'm really focused on trying to find a route that I haven't taken, finding some place I haven't been, that I have not passed through even, so that I'm only seeing new things. And I will close with this idea. And this is the stuff that's impossible to put into words. It's very emotional for me. The things that I see, the vistas that I see, are overwhelming, especially this time of year. So I've had a wonderful summer, just a really great summer of travel. I had a great spring and early summer up at the lake. There's podcasts about that. But all the way across to New Hampshire and Vermont and upstate New York and all that was incredible. I wouldn't recommend staying with friends for 4 weeks. I don't think they got sick of me, but I was just chomping at the bit. But I had no choice because I wanted to go to the wedding. And the wedding capped it off beautifully. And I've often said, you know, nomads aren't on the road all the time. We have family obligations. Things happen. People get married. People pass away. Children are born. There's things going on that you want to be there for. And the fact that we can travel allows us to do that. And it's great. So we're often off the road dealing with something, either getting our vehicle fixed or seeing friends or whatever it is that we do. Even now, coming back, now the leaves are starting to change and they probably will be in full change color in just another few days as I pass through Kentucky and Tennessee. It's incredible, the vistas. And it is a completely different world. I don't know how many times I can say that, how much I can emphasize it. I don't think I can emphasize it too much, and I think it's so important. It is a completely different world from the world of watching the news on television or being in the day-to-day. My friend in New Hampshire uses an aggregator to get videos from all the different news sources, and he gets up every day and he watches the news, and he watches the news at noon, and we watch the news after dinner. And I mean, you know, this is what we went in Rome, right? And as soon as I got out into the world that is not on that television, that is not in the scroll, it's a completely different world. And it is a great world. It is a world of people in small towns taking their kids to school or opening their businesses or visiting friends or doing whatever they do. You know, they have their problems too. I'm not going to deny that. But in general, it's so important to be able to see this country from the perspective of the two-lane road, because it's a different country from the people that are under pressure on a day-to-day basis back in the world. This is not a value judgment about people that are under pressure back in the world, as I call it, with their day-to-day jobs, especially if you're younger. You know, you got to build a life somehow. You can't just walk away. And people have children, they have children on the way, they're trying to build a career so that they can do some of the things they want to do later in life. I get it. But I think when we're back in the world, we tend to gravitate to, for lack of a better term, just screens. And you end up spending an awful lot of time on screens, watching shows that depict life, and it makes me feel like I'm not living life. That news I don't care about. Things in the news that have nothing to do with me and never will. Or alarmism and news that is built to predict the worst possible outcome no matter what. For example, Hurricane Lee, which was just hyped up beyond belief about what it was going to do and which way it was going to go. And here I am in a campground with a beautiful fire that's probably going to end up burning all night. I just listened to hours of music on my phone because there's no signal up here, and just had a great time alone. There's nobody here. I'm the only person up here. One of the benefits of doing this after Labor Day, there's nobody here. There's like three people in this whole campground. And so it is deathly quiet, although you can hear the bugs and you can hear some people moving around here and there. But basically, there's nobody here. That is a great feeling. And again, this only accentuates, because I can do this every night. This just accentuates the feeling that we have of just being in a different world, different energy. It's a very high vibe. Somebody said, "What's it like?" And I was like, "It's just an extremely high vibe, because you're traveling and you're up for it. You're excited about it. And if it gets to the point where it's it's bothering you, or you're having a hard time, you get off the road for a couple days and you just relax." Sometimes I'll go into a campground and just stay there for 3 days just to be off the road for a little while. And then you get back out and you're excited about going again. So it's a very high vibe, and that's probably the best thing about all of it. So heading southwest, can't wait to get to Arizona, but I'm not in a big hurry. Gonna take my time and enjoy these beautiful fall colors as they come on. So tomorrow, rolling south through Pennsylvania to West Virginia, and then across West Virginia very briefly at the very top, just under Wheeling, into Ohio, and then on down into Kentucky. So that's probably going to be the next 3 days of travel. And what I will do is I will post this, and then I'll record a bunch of short vignettes as I travel. It also feels necessary to just say that, as a caveat, I don't want people to think that I'm telling them that your life back in the world is crap and you should do this. Everyone should do this. I don't feel that way. Some people, this is not something that they should do. I don't think I would have done this in my 30s. You know, because I had something to do. I was in radio and I was doing my radio thing, and there's no way that I would have given that up to just drive around, although I did drive around a lot, and eventually I did give it up to drive around. But it was a considerably number of years later. So I if you're building a life and all of that, unless you can figure out a way to build a life while you're doing this, which is actually kind of an interesting challenge, This is probably not something that can be done. I don't know what it would be like to have kids. And people do nomad travel with kids. I think it would be a great education. Much of the best stuff that I have ever learned, I learned traveling with my parents through the South and the Midwest when we'd go see my grandpa down in Florida. And we made that trip almost every year for many years. Or out to Iowa, you know, or someplace like that. So I learned a lot, and I think if you do homeschooling, let's say you're going to do homeschooling anyway, having your kid on the road is a tremendous education for them, and I don't think that they would ever forget that. So, again, it's not for everybody, but it isn't also some kind of an editorial judgment about you people back there in the world doing what you do. And I've often said it, and I have to say it almost every time I do some missive, because to me, and I've been back in the world, and I am an urban person, I almost don't recognize myself. I almost don't recognize how much I love the solitude, looking up and seeing the stars, and seeing the new moon peeking through the trees. I can literally see Mars right through the trees right now. Smoke drifting up from the fire, the flames licking these two big logs that I got today. Had a great steak dinner with broccoli and a salad and a half a gallon of coffee. Nobody around, just me, and it is fantastic. Not to blow up the vibe, but yes, the price of fuel is going up. I will, if you'll permit me, one editorial comment. This is a bit of a supply shock, so it's creating what they call, and I don't know that I even believe that it exists, but it's called cost push inflation. Certain historic economists simply refused to accept that there was anything called cost push inflation, that these kinds of supply shocks are transitory. But anyway, the price of oil continues to percolate up. I don't think it's going to last. I'm not going to go into a long and involved dissertation about that. We'll see. But this is where you start looking for independent refueling stations. I'll give you an example, and this goes beyond independent refueling. I stopped at the Seneca Indian Reservation, which has a truck stop just north of here, on 219, and they had diesel at 410, and diesel is at 479 pretty much every, if you can find it for 464, then that's great. That's a great price. 410. And the difference is taxes and being able to make your own deal on fuel, etc. And 36 Lynn, the independently owned and operated refueling station in Minneapolis, in South Minneapolis at 36th Street South and Lindale Avenue South and Lynn Lake, can get you a better deal on fuel. And again, I'm one of these people, I will literally go out of my way to save 5 cents on a gallon of fuel, because I'm so much focused on not paying the top price if I can avoid it. So these independent refueling stations are great, and they're handy. And in Minneapolis, these are the guys you want to talk to. I could tell you all about the community involvement. I can tell you all about the store, which has tons of locally sourced food, which is really a cool thing, because it helps the local food producers and so forth. They're great at 36 Lynn. Great sense of humor, community involvement, and a better price on fuel. What's not to love, right? 36 Lynn, the independently owned and operated refueling station in South Minneapolis. Check them out online at 36lynn.com, on Instagram at 36lynn. Stop by, say hello, get some coffee. They have Peace Coffee. Fill your car up and be happy you saved a couple of cents per gallon, right? 36 Lynn. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, 1114. New day, headed southwest again. The Bob Davis Podcast.
Well, I'm so tired of crying, but I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again. Well, I'm so tired of crying, but I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again. I ain't got no woman just to call my special friend. You know the first time I traveled out in the rain and snow, in the rain and snow. You know the first time I traveled out in the rain and snow, in the rain and snow. I didn't have no pharaoh, not even no place to go. And my dear mother left me when I was quite young, when I was quite young.